Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Jackson hands it to Henry.
Ball, Henry, balls out. Picked up by the Lions. They've got it inside the 20-yard line. DJ Reed with the football in his hands. The Lions stripped it away from Derrick Henry. What a big turn of events, and the Lions have got it now.
And that's courtesy of the Lions radio network, and Derrick Henry certainly didn't see me taking that fumble all too well, similar to a couple weeks ago, a little deja vu for him. What's up? This is Maggie and Perloff, EJ Stewart here, Andrew Bogus here in for both Maggie and Perloff, and we will definitely talk about what this loss last night meant for the Ravens on Monday Night Football. But to me, Bogues, the story is kind of the resurgence of the Lions, right? Like, we came into week one, we saw them get housed by the Packers, and everything was, oh, they lost the coordinators, they had their chance when they lost to the Niners, and they lost to the Commanders last year in the playoffs, and the window was now closed. I think we now see, Bogus, that that was extremely premature, because I think if you watched last night, there's no question that you were watching an elite team in the NFL with the Lions just, I think, going up and down the field on the Baltimore Ravens.
Oh, wait, did we collectively get overreact to one result in professional sports? We've never done that before. Yes, what we now know about the Detroit Lions this morning is whatever happens to them for the rest of this season is not about whoever is coaching somewhere else. Aaron Glenn, Mr. Johnson in Chicago. It may come down to, again, Dan Campbell gambling incorrectly or too much on a fourth down or some other shortcoming or a significant injury down the road. But this season's not going to be defined by the changes on their coaching staff, because this team has put whatever issues of like in that area have been fixed, resolved, if they even existed in the first place. And they went in last night, and people that cover this team have said this, so this is not me being hyperbolic, that was as impressive and significant a win as they have had under Dan Campbell. That's how good they were last night.
And I think a lot of it was because it looked a lot like the old Lions, so to speak, right? Or at the very least, the Lions that we've come to know under Dan Campbell. It was trick plays. It was the offense making explosive plays up and down the field. And it was a defense that may have given up some yards, but made some crucial takeover type plays. They were hitting the quarterback, multiple sacks on Lamar Jackson. To me, this looked a lot like the Lions, and I know maybe we could look at last week and say, well, last week looked a lot like them as well, but the Bears looked like such a mess. I think maybe some people didn't really know what to take from that. The Lions having to win last week, couldn't go down 0-2, so now you face an elite team on the road, a team that, by the way, a couple years ago blew them out. So right. I was actually very curious to see what the Lions would look like on grass. I know it was warm weather, but on grass against a team that is also one of the elite teams in the NFL. And this is what the Lions felt like. And to me, you mentioned Dan Campbell. In some ways, he really became the head coach of the Lions last night to me. I think the conversations about, like you mentioned, Aaron Glenn or Ben Johnson, how much those guys had an impact on this team. Seeing Dan Campbell, even him holding up that play sheet, I guess he always holds it up, but it seemed like he almost was in there. And Troy Aikman, I thought, did a good job last night basically illustrating that Dan Campbell was telling the coordinator, telling Jared Goff on second down, basically, when they're going to go for it on fourth down, given the yardage and the situation. So to me, Dan Campbell, this game was a lot about him. This was about him taking over as the true leader of this team and showing that those guys that left, they left, and we'll see what their journey is, but the Lions story is far from over.
Yeah, and you know what? I certainly agree, how could you not, that they looked like the Lions with the fourth down gambles and the creativity and Aiden Hutchinson leading a very impressive defensive effort. But it also felt, they also felt like what the Ravens want to be too, because a lot of that game last night was about physicality and was about beating the guy in front of you, and they controlled the line of scrimmage on both sides of things. Montgomery and Gibbs were tremendous, and a lot of those runs were right through the middle of the line. Now the beautiful trick play for the 28, their fourth touchdown. So like there were some outside stuff, there was some speed stuff, but a lot of it was just scooting through holes created by that offensive line. And the guys on TV were talking about, you know, they've got veterans at left tackle and center and right tackle, and then the two young guys at each guard spot. And those young guys were opening up holes for Gibbs and Montgomery to run through. And then defensively, good coverage, making Lamar run around, move around, and allowing that front seven to eventually get to him for seven sacks. So it was old school Lions in terms of what Dan Campbell's Lions look like. But I was impressed by the kind of the smash mouth, beating the Ravens at their own game aspect of this one as well.
Yeah, Calvin Shepard, former Giants great, leading the defense for the Lions
right.
as defensive coordinator. No, I agree. This was a lot about physicality. And in many ways, you mentioned the explosive plays going right downhill. This was with Montgomery. We're used to seeing Gibbs make those kind of plays.
Yeah.
I think it was actually also really surprising, too. I was surprised they said Montgomery's 74-yard run was the third longest of his career. I was like, he has 80-yard bombs? Like, when did that happen? But either way, seeing him play so well and seeing the Lions really, again, establish the line of scrimmage. Because when the Lions have been dominant, what have we talked about? It's been their offensive line. Well, you lose Frank Ragnow, he retires, and you move over Rutledge over to center, and you kind of wonder, okay, what does that look like? Like, how is this going to work with adding, you know, multiple guards now, younger guys into the line? And it looked like a seamless transition to me.
Yeah,
and I don't know, when you look at the NFC, we could talk about the Rams and what they did and their inability to close against Philly. I still look at Detroit to me as the team that Philly should be most worried about when it comes to repeating. If they're going to get out of the NFC, they may not have to go through Detroit because it seems like the Eagles are destined for a pretty gaudy record and the Lions still play in a very difficult division. But make no mistake about it, to me, they're going to have to handle the Lions if they want to win another Super Bowl.
Yeah, that's interesting because the Rams, even though they're 0-2 in Philadelphia in the last handful of months here, they also are almost 2-0 in Philadelphia in the last batch of time. And I don't know, as impressive as the Lions were last night and as much credit as I want to give them for the way they won that game, I might, if we're talking outside in Philadelphia in January in bad conditions,
right,
wouldn't you have more confidence in the Rams winning a game there than this Lions team?
I mean, we've taken a lot of stock in how close that game was between the Eagles and Rams during the playoffs. Obviously,
yes,
we played a game a couple days ago that was very close. But we kind of forget how that game became close. The Eagles kind of let the Rams back into the game. And the Rams had your typical Los Angeles issues playing in snowy weather. This was not like, oh, this is a game where the Rams were physical and muscled up the Eagles and they just lost on one play. There were fumbles. There was sloppy play. They had a nightmare trying to stop Saquon Barkley. So
yeah,
a lot of the Rams' issues when it came to warm weather team playing in cold weather, they showed themselves in that game. Now, they were able to still stay in that game. And Matthew Stafford, who, even though he played in the Dome for a lot of his career, did play in Detroit. He was able to make some plays late that made that game very close. But to me, the Lions, I think you look at their rosters and they're very close. But I think the Lions still have more explosive players offensively. I think when you look at what Gibbs can do, he can take it to the house from anywhere he gets the ball. Now we're seeing Montgomery play the way he's playing. I'm on Ron St. Brown, who you heard, I don't know, the broadcast, that Jared Goff said he's the best receiver in the NFL. He would not want any other receiver in the NFL besides I'm on Ron St. Brown alive, in part because he's so selfless. You know, it's not necessarily that he may be the most, quote-unquote, talented, but
right,
that he'll block. He doesn't care when he doesn't get the ball, and when he does get the ball, he makes plays. Jameson Williams was a big factor early in the game. I just still look at their weapons, and I look at just, again, the identity of the team. You're going to rush the passer and you're going to get explosive plays offensively. That's the thing that is going to beat Philly to me. You're going to have to be able to hit Jalen Hurts. You're going to have to be able to take away their passing game completely and make them one-dimensional. And then on offense, you got to be able to hit some explosives against the Eagles. The Eagles are the team that they're going to allow you to go up and down the field, kind of like they did with the Rams, where, you know, Stafford was putting together drives, but they weren't getting touchdowns, which allowed the Eagles to stay in that game. I don't think you can play that game with the Lions in one part because they're going to get these explosive plays, but two, because Dan Campbell's going to go for it on fourth down.
Right.
So in some ways, like, their strategy actually is perfect for Philly because they're not going to allow themselves to settle for field goals. They are going to go for touchdowns, and considering how well they play at the point of attack, they're going to be able to get some.
And as we learned on Sunday, you really can't kick field goals now against the Eagles, because they're going to block them and have a huge guy running back for touchdowns,
yeah,
which is a whole other thing. And I not to get too far away from last night, but this Eagle team, is it 17 out of 18, 18 out of 19,
18 out of 19
wins now? And the one time they lost was because Jalen Hurts didn't finish the game. I mean, they're in this place now where it almost doesn't matter what you do against them, that their best talent is just figuring out how they're going to win. And it might be Barkley. It might be Jalen Hurts accounting for four touchdowns. It might be blocking two kicks in the fourth quarter or a pick six, whatever. They have found that beautiful kind of like universe when you're so good and so talented and I guess well-coached and well-run that that the universe just kind of like karma takes care of you, and you have willed yourself and played yourself into getting all of the breaks and whatnot. And that's where so for the Lions, for the Packers, for maybe the Commanders and whoever else lives in the NFC West, the biggest problem might be, as it kind of was against the Chiefs for a while, is that it's hard to beat the Eagles and like the atmosphere that's just around them right now.
And I get that. The number to call in, 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4ISN, talking about the Monday Night Football game from last night. I think the other thing that really excites me about the Lions in terms of that potential matchup with the Eagles, and comparing them to really all the other teams in the NFC, because they're going to have to also go through all these other teams, the Packers, the Commanders, all these teams you'd mentioned, is to me, to beat the Eagles, we're now seeing that you have to play your A-plus game, and even your A-plus game for some teams may not be good enough.
Yeah.
Like, there are some average teams that can play their A-plus game right against the Eagles, and they're not going to win. And in many ways, maybe you could say the Cowboys, in some ways in week one, maybe played their version of an A-plus game, and they still lost. The Lions, to me, are one of the teams where if they play their A game, I don't think anybody beats them. I think because they put up too many points, they caused too many turnovers. And that, to me, is the thing about playing Philadelphia is if you don't play at a 9 or a 10, you're losing. It's over. You have no chance because they're going to hit your quarterback a ton. They have this cheat code that is the tush push, so they're going to be able to get fourth downs. They're going to get short yardage plays. So you have to play your top-end game. And when we see the Lions playing at the highest level, when they're playing average teams, they're just blowing them out by 30, 40 points. And even when they're playing elite teams like the Ravens, who I don't really – there are some issues with the Ravens that we'll discuss. I don't move them down anyway in terms of the top teams in the AFC. But to me, it's very clear that if the Lions are playing their best, you're probably going to lose because the margin for error is so small because they're going to hit you with the waves. It doesn't matter how many yards they got to go. Two drives where you're driving 90-plus yards. I mean, that's ridiculous. I don't care how many issues the Ravens have defensively. That you shouldn't be able to do that in an NFL game. The fact that the Lions are able to do that on the road shows you that if they play their A-plus game, it's going to be tough for anybody to beat them. So that's why I really like them a lot.
Yeah, I get that. And we'll have much more this morning on the Ravens side of this. But you just said something that caught my ear that you're not kind of – I think I heard what you said is that you're not kind of downgrading them off of last night. I mean, I am. I'm spooked. Really? I don't like this. I don't like Derrick Henry fumbling. It feels a little bit – obviously it wasn't a collapse like week one in Buffalo. But the point remains is – and almost kind of the opposite of the Eagles to a certain extent, like we were just talking about, the Ravens now seem to be good at finding ways to lose.
Right.
And losing the games, they're still going to win more than they lose, but the games that matter, the games that define your season, that turn momentum, that prove who you are, instead of them winning to prove that they're elite, that they need to be in the conversation amongst the best of the AFC, they keep losing these games, and it's gone on for a while. And last night, you know, you can very simply make the argument that scoring the amount of points that they did last night at home is supposed to be, should be good enough to win against anybody. And instead, they gave up 38 points and couldn't make one stop and hold off the Lions and get that W last night.
888-710-4ISN, talking Monday Night Football, Andrew Bogish in, EJ Stewart in for Maggie and Perloff. We will get to the Ravens. One thing I will say, though, and it's the thing I think that most Ravens fans will point to and the Ravens will point to is they do have some significant injuries on defense.
Yes.
And their defense last year took a long, long time to come around. It basically wasn't until the last month of the season where you started to see the Ravens actually look like the Baltimore Ravens. It's a little discouraging that they came into this year and you would think, okay, maybe some of the kinks they worked out after losing their defensive coordinator, that they would be able to get right back on the horse and you know, now second year they'd be good. That hasn't been the case, but when you're losing Nnamdi Madubuike and you're losing
Van Noy.
Yeah, Van Noy and Jair Alexander, who has struggled, but he's been injured. He didn't play last night. You lose those guys, I think you have to give them some rope defensively. I know there are concerns, and I do understand them, but I think that's why I probably don't downgrade them, because I've seen them do this before. I've seen them start defensively, have some issues, and then figure it out towards the end of the year. Now, the part about them and whether or not they could win these tough games, win these games against the elite teams that they seem to keep losing, and they seem to keep losing in kind of like, I don't want to say embarrassing fashion, but almost like fluky fashion.
Yeah,
like
it seemed avoidable fashion.
Yeah, like it seemed like that was going to be the kind of game where it was going to be whoever got the ball last was going to win. And, you know, a guy who almost never fumbles in his career now has a fumbling problem. Like, right. That seems to be a kind of thing that only seems to happen to the Baltimore Ravens. And to say that about the Ravens, that sounds almost like chargering. I don't think ravening is a thing, but it seems like they almost feel like the new age Chargers with some of the ways that they lose.
Although I guess maybe their ravensing happens later in the season than the Chargers one does. But, I mean, don't forget, the overriding Lamar Jackson conversation is that he's got no Super Bowls.
Yeah.
So at some point, the Chargers issues happen maybe in November and December and keep them out of the postseason. The Ravens get in and then can disappoint you.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, they haven't been there. They have not been there at the end in a long time. And you can say that they've underachieved. They have not exceeded expectations and then lost an AFC title game. Usually you're going, they're losing a home game or to somebody that they shouldn't win, or even just a winnable road playoff game, and they don't get the job done. So there's too much stuff that has not gone their way. And some of it is out of their control. They have been absolutely overrun by injuries that nobody can bounce back from. You're not built to survive that many injuries. And this year, there are significant ones, and the Madubuike one in particular, that they don't know when he's back or if he's coming back.
It's a neck, too, right, which is always a little
so
wary.
At least Van Noy has a return date attached to him. But then also, too, we love to talk about how good their front office is. So if then depth's an issue after some guys getting banged up, then whose fault is that?
Well, that's the question about the Ravens, because it feels like, and I can't speak for their fan base, but it feels like there's been a lot of people who have settled for this regime, for the Ozzie Newsome, for the John Harbaugh regime, without really much conversation about their job security or just their job performance in general. And to see a Baltimore Ravens team give up 38 points, give up a 74-yard run, give up multiple 90-yard drives, and think about what their identity is supposed to be, it was alarming. Or that part, at least, I could say.
Or even last night when they get the ball back, is it 28-24 or 31-24, and they go 3-and-out.
Yeah.
And Lamar is under pressure all three plays. I think one was actually a sack. One was just he got back across the line of scrimmage. But then the offense there in a spot when the game was still undecided did nothing. And gave the ball up immediately.
Yeah, I think the guy got out-coached. I mean, Lamar's taking these sacks. It seemed like nobody was wide open. I mean, Todd Monken is one of the best offensive coordinators in the NFL. But the fact that they couldn't scheme up some easy throws for Lamar once the pressure really started getting going. And Lamar, he will hold the ball. Like, in some ways, you got to kind of know, like, the weakness of your own team. And Lamar's always going to try to go for the big play. So the fact that they didn't scheme up some short stuff to at least get the ball moving, I thought it was a mistake, and the Lions, credit to Shepard and that defense, they absolutely took advantage.
And I know nobody cares about this, but they did scheme up another touchdown pass to Mark Andrews, which lost me my fantasy matchup at the last possible minute last
night. Ain't that a shame?
The second touchdown catch did me in.
I mean, I wish I could talk about my fantasy team, but we're 0-3, and all I had was the Ravens defense last night. So how do you think they did?
I stink.
Yeah, exactly.
I
won.
I beat Emmanuel Barbari.
Yeah,
they got to
hit the transfer portal or the waiver wire.
So who's the better GM, EJ or Jerry Jones? His Cowboys are banged up. They are struggling.
Elijah.
And does it get any easier coming up here soon for the Cowboys? We'll get to Big D when we come back. It's Maggie and Pearl without Maggie or Pearl this morning on the Infinity Sports Network.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. EJ Stewart here with Andrew Bogish in for Maggie and Perloff this morning. Number to call in, 888-710-4ISN, talking Monday Night Football as the Lions get in what I think was a statement win over the Baltimore Ravens in Baltimore last night. Again, number to call in, 888-710-4ISN. Let's get back to the phone lines here. Let's go to Josh, who's in Pennsylvania. Josh, what's happening?
Morning, guys. I hope you're having fun while mom and dad are out.
Isn't that always how it works, though? Once they're out, you know, you get to eat pizza until noon or midnight, and you stay up late. This is how it goes.
Well, I hope they left you some fresh squeezed orange juice, EJ. So the NFC power rankings, I think something that's holding the Rams back, and I'm a Rams fan, is McVay's hesitation and unwillingness for fourth down plays.
Yeah.
We saw it on the Philly game on Sunday. That fourth and one just got blown up to smithereens.
Yeah.
And I think that gives him hesitation. If he was willing and we were able to do it, like we had a quarterback that could sneak, like Goff or Hurt, we could maybe compete. But I think that's the one thing that's holding us back.
It's funny, Bogachow, like fourth down has now become like almost like a phase of the game, right? Like in many ways, like we see teams who what their philosophy is, what their plays are. Like, these things now actually matter. There was a time where it was more than fourth and two. You were kicking a field goal or something
right
every single time. But now, I think you're right. I think the Rams and their inability to get short yardage fourth down plays or settle for field goals help them lose that game, and I think will be a factor moving forward.
And it's a little surprising because McVay, being younger and creative and innovative, you'd think he would be a little more.
Yeah.
And I don't know his overall numbers if he goes for more than most coaches do. But even, you know, last night with Dan Campbell, who we're used to doing this, even that last one in a touchdown game just shy of midfield, like that's a dice. I don't know what the analytics are.
They will certainly say go.
There are multiple Twitter accounts that tell you the probability of this and that. But as they're doing it, I'm not surprised that they're lining up for it. But I'm still going, I don't think I have the mind or the you know what's to do it here. And then to call the play that they called, that Jared Goff's got to make that throw over the top to St. Brown. Not a handoff, not something simple. They go forward and they throw the high degree of difficulty play out there too. That is a world that I still can't live in.
It's the world we're in now, Bogues. I mean,
it's not right or wrong. This is about my shortcomings as a potential NFL head coach or play caller.
But you know, to me, a lot of this too comes down to your personnel. It should, at least in my opinion. Now, it doesn't for enough teams, where I think teams just go by the analytics or the play sheet to say, okay, this says go, therefore I go. I feel like the reason why the Lions go so much, or at least the reason why they're successful as much as they are, is because they have better players than you. And oftentimes, and when it's only 2 yards to get, they can get 2 yards. And even if they call a high difficulty degree kind of play, like that play action fake, that would have got them a first down because Marlon Humphrey held anyway. But
right. The
fact that Goff had to make that throw, well, Goff can make that throw. If he has a clean pocket, he's one of the more accurate quarterbacks in the NFL. Amon-Ra St. Brown is one of the best wide receivers in the NFL. And the reality is that's going to be a factor for the Lions. Now, will we get to January and they're playing a cold game in Philadelphia and they're up multiple scores and they're going to keep going for it on fourth down? Like, is this going to be a factor against a great team, a great defense? Because the Ravens are not a great defense. Like, that's very obvious, right? But if they're playing against Philly or they're playing against some of these teams in the NFC, there's a chance that they will be playing a great defense. And can you get away with those kind of calls when you play against the top teams defensively?
Yeah, and the bigger argument here is where I think coaches are still struggling to find out the sweet spot for them is it's kind of that you're coaching to win or coaching not to lose. And for the longest time, the overriding philosophy was protecting leads and being safe or I don't want to lose by 10, I'd rather lose by 3. It's a very, very protective way to go about things. And it's refreshing that we have this new outlook and there are so many guys and there's a lot of logic in it too, especially just when you're in that middle third of the field. You gain very few yards by punting as opposed to going for it and failing on fourth down. It doesn't, unless, because you can't just pick up and drop a punt perfectly where you want it. It goes out of bounds, it goes in the end zone, and you're gaining a net of like 25 to 30 yards. That's not that big of a deal.
It's a work of art.
So there's sure. So there's I can see the math. I can see the philosophy, but in the singular moments like last night, I'm still sitting there going, it was nice to not be personally invested in that moment. Like, those are not my teams. That's not my anxiety. That's not my broken heart. But it's also, the flip side is the way that the Lions respond to Dan Campbell choosing to go for it, the confidence that he shows in the offense and in the defense for going, if we don't get this, I know you guys are going to stop it.
Yep.
And when they get it, they cut to him, and there's two defensive guys that are chest-bumping Dan Campbell for going for it. And like, that is, he's created this mystique with them, and it's scary, but it's impressive too.
You talk about being emotionally invested in a team. You know who I would not want to be emotionally invested in? The Dallas Cowboys right now.
No thanks.
But we'll get to them in a second. Number to call in, 888-710-4ISM. But first, Justin Rock joins us with some sports updates. What's up, Justin?
Doing well, EJ. How you doing, buddy?
Doing great.
Thank you guys so much for having me today. Hey, folks, a reminder, don't miss any of the action this football season with Prize Picks, where it's good to be right. Download Prize Picks and use code PRIMETIME and get a $50 bonus credit instantly when you play $5. Must be present in certain states. Visit prizepicks.com for restrictions and details. The Lions and Ravens Monday Night Football. We were expecting an entertaining ball game, and we got exactly that. The Lions pick up over 200 yards on the ground and through the air. The Ravens squander another fourth quarter lead in Detroit's 38-30 victory. Dan Campbell, as we were just talking about, no stranger to rolling the dice on fourth downs. Did it three times on Monday, converted all three. Bogish, a few moments ago, called them you-know-whats, ESPN's Troy Aikman, stealing a Bill Raftery-ism to describe the Detroit head coach.
Yeah, and fourth and two, and the Lions, Troy, look like they're going to go for it. They're 2-for-2 on fourth down tries in this game.
Yeah, maybe they tried a hard count, draw them off sides, but didn't appear to be any hesitation from Dan Campbell. Not surprised. He's got big onions. I mean, this is a bold move. Even with a first down, they cannot run out the clock because the Ravens still have all three timeouts.
Now, I had an FCC Pilotti dump button thought when Troy Aikman said this last night.
Really?
Well, because obviously when Raftery just goes, onions, we know what he's talking about. I just said, like, have the onions. But, like, he specifically said that Dan Campbell has big ones. And I didn't know
big onions.
if that stepped into a weird realm of inappropriate.
Well, how do you know that perhaps in the production meeting they were talking about how
his anatomy?
How he buys produce, and maybe they're talking about Vidalia onions.
Mm.
Layers. Onions have layers.
Yeah,
they do.
Big Shrek guy.
Because there's a lot of rules. There's a lot of rules that are like logical or not. Like like you are allowed to say. When you talk about bathroom stuff, you can talk about the bathroom, but you can't say that you did something on someone. That's a problem.
Like pissed off, but not.
Right. You can't change off to on in that sentence. That's,
exactly.
That's the line. So it's one thing to go, man, those are some onions when somebody's talking about like being risky or confident. But when you say Dan Campbell has big onions, I perked up for a second.
Now, it's funny because like I didn't know why it sounded weird to me.
But it did sound weird,
right? I assumed it was just because it was Troy Aikman.
Maybe.
But then you're making the point that, yes, he did add like some adjectives and some things that made it different than how Bill Raftery does it. So that does make sense to me. But then my other head thought, well, this is, I don't know, it's 11 o'clock at night at this point or 10 o'clock. Like, are we
and they were on one last night, those two guys.
Oh, hover hours?
Yeah, they were on one. Henrietta.
Troy was having some fun last night.
Yeah, Troy.
I was going to cut that too. Yeah, no, I have that. I emailed that to myself too.
Yeah,
we'll have
guys,
that later.
And it's, I don't know what it is, but it feels like they have hit a new gear as a combo. I don't know. I like them on Fox, but there was a time where early on when it was them and the Manning cast, I would have given the Manning cast a lot more time. I didn't until like the fourth quarter to see what the Manning cast was doing. I went right back to Troy and Buck. I had no interest in continuing.
They felt a little bit more corporate when they were on Fox. It seems like over the years, as they've gotten more and more comfortable on ESPN, Joe and now Troy has followed suit in terms of just letting themselves be who they are and just trying to have fun and enjoy themselves during the broadcast. And I feel a lot of times as a broadcaster, if we're having fun doing what we're doing, it sort of translates to the listener. And I think it's been great for the broadcast on Monday Night Football.
Yeah, I'm wondering, because I think Buck has always had this in him. I'm wondering if Troy was the slower adapter to being like loose and fun.
We
and
say that,
like,
but
relaxing a little bit.
That's true, but then Troy, when he gets in these like interviews with like local media or just radio shows, whatever, he says a lot. Like,
it's
true. He lets the chopper ring a little bit. So it is surprising that I agree, as a color analyst for a lot of his career, he was very buttoned up. That guy is gone. I don't know if he saw the Jay-Z meme and thought, you know what? I look like Hove. I might as well just start talking like him and just say whatever I want.
Come on, Daddy.
Justin, what else you got here?
Derrick Henry had another costly fumble in the fourth quarter, his third fumble in as many games, and understandably, Derrick was dejected postgame.
Crazy right now. Three games straight. That happened to in my career. Straight fumbles in critical moment.
Yeah.
Ain't good for that. I apologize to Flock Nation, and you know, I'll just gonna keep working and get this fixed.
How great was he falling down the bench after slamming his helmet down?
It was sort of like Odell Beckham a couple of years ago when he got so mad coming off the field, he tried kicking the field goal net, and the net just toppled on top of the net. It gave that vibe.
It did.
Yeah, but in some ways, I actually appreciated it more. Because when you're so perfect in your crash out, in some ways it almost feels like not rehearsed, but almost like performative. Like, this was very clear. He was like outside of his body. He was outside of his mind. He could not believe he had fumbled. This is a guy who's one of the more coordinated athletes.
It was the most I felt like Derrick Henry in my life.
Yeah, no, seriously. This is one of the most like coordinated
slamming
athletes
the helmet
in the world.
On the bench and then just like awkwardly falling and sort of like planting himself on the bench to make it look like he did it on purpose.
Because I can't
like
fumble
had a big spot.
No,
but I can fall.
Sounds like Rock had him in fantasy football and he lost his weekend.
I actually do not have Derrick Henry. I think I'm good after the fumbles. But
I do still want.
I can relate to Derrick Henry as someone who is extremely uncoordinated, trying to do things in a bit of frustration and then just completely whiffing and making myself even more embarrassed than I was prior to it.
Cut yourself some slack. I saw some celebration video of you going crazy with the Brooklyn Cyclones, man. I see some coordination in that jumping around.
They gave me my champagne bath celebration, which was very unexpected but very cool.
Are we still calling this the Sally League?
I threw a Sally League not in the final call of the championship game last week, but it's gone more a little more corporate with just South Atlantic League, but it's still colloquially called the Sally League.
So the Mets might not make the playoffs altogether, but the baby Mets in Brooklyn are champs.
Yeah, the champions.
And the Rumble Ponies are still playing?
They are still playing. They are playing game two of the Eastern League Championship Series tonight.
Hey, all right. 2030 might be up
Future's
for the Mets.
Right. Let's go.
Sit tight.
The best thing I can say to Mets fans out there, you hope with the way things are going that in 2 to 3 years you look back on what has happened over the last 3 months. And you can laugh about it. Easier to say now than, you know, easier to say then than now.
Yes, and or the other side is perhaps these minor leaguers that are actually winning something would then be traded for aging players who will lose for the Mets as they do most September.
That is one way to look at it, EJ.
I mean,
from a Mets fan. I didn't even say that.
I mean, this is the world we're in, guys. I'm wearing a Mets chain, but this is the world we're in, right? 888-710-4ISN. Justin, thank you so much. We do have to get to the
Cowboys. Appreciate you guys.
We do have to get to the Cowboys because Jerry Jones.
Because they're the Cowboys.
Yeah, and because Jerry Jones keeps talking. What did he say next that scratches your head? Your guess is as good as ours, but we'll tell you in a bit. It's EJ and Bogish in for Maggie and Perloff.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's all bad for the Cowboys. What's up? This is EJ Stewart joined by Andrew Bogish. You're listening to Maggie and Perloff. Maggie and Perloff both out. And as we look at the Cowboys situation, so they leave this weekend with a blowout loss and some sprained ankles that could land guys on IR. CD Lamb sprained his ankle. He could be out as much as 4 to 6 weeks. Tyler Booker, their rookie guard, also injures his ankle. Both guys could be on IR. And you're coming into a game now where you have a Green Bay Packers team that is probably a little bit, after feeling themselves maybe a little humbled and definitely focused considering all the conversation around Micah Parsons, it doesn't feel like a great time for the Dallas Cowboys, which is something we've been saying for years at this point.
Yeah, no, and I'll be honest, most of us enjoy saying it,
yeah,
and don't want it to end anytime soon. And there's no reason to think that it is going to end anytime soon. The way it's being run and the way that Jerry keeps publicly telling us it's going to be run. And there's definitely an argument to be made that they deserve all of this because they have,
yeah,
although this is self-sabotage and self-inflicted wounds, and here they are. Now, the only good thing about this current rash of injuries is that everything is relatively short-term.
Yes.
A month's a long time, but the schedule isn't terrible. And if you get C.D. Lamb, and there's now two offensive linemen out, I think Connor Reed has a high ankle sprain too, right?
Yeah, all ankles.
Right.
Yeah.
So they're all back, you know, end of October-ish. So there's time to recover. But what are you recovering from? And really, how capable are you of recovering to an extent where you're a true threat in the NFC? And I don't think they have that ability.
Yeah, holding down the fort is going to be, you know, imperative, right? Like, this is the season. Like, the season for the Cowboys is these next 4 weeks without CeeDee Lamb, without Booker, and without BB. I think they can hold on simply because the Panthers and the Jets are on this schedule.
Right.
Like, it's not an easy schedule, but there are two wins that will likely just be handed to them if they show up to work.
Yeah.
So if you get those two wins, you get out of this stretch, and if you get these guys back in 4 weeks, if it is just 4 weeks, okay, you get out of this, you're what, 4-5 at that point? The season's not definitely over. You're not in a great position, but you definitely have a shot to make a run. Now, the schedule's going to get a lot harder after that, but then you hope with all your horses that you can go on a run and somehow sneak into a wild card spot.
It's Green Bay at Jets at Panthers, home for Commanders. That's the stretch that they're, the next four games with these multiple multi-week absences. The problem is, you know, they were kind of healthy when they played the Giants, and they made the Giants look like the greatest show on turf, and then the Giants played horrific offense a week later against the Chiefs, the extent where Russell Wilson was just for fun throwing the ball 5 yards to the back of the end zone under duress when he wasn't throwing interceptions. So the Cowboys are not a good football team.
Yeah.
And they don't, you know, the Vikings are coming off a remarkable effort on Sunday without J.J. McCarthy, because they have Brian Flores' all-world defense to rely on. And they're not going to get Isaiah Rodgers' multiple return TDs, but they're going to get good defensive efforts. They're going to make it hard for the other team and give Carson Wentz a chance to do something, score some points on offense. The Cowboys don't have that to lean on, nor do they have it once everyone is back in four, 5, or 6 weeks.
Yeah, that's not happening. If they're going to turn this around, it's going to be on the arm of Dak Prescott. That, to me, is very clear. 888-710-4ISN. Let's go to Mike, who's in Dallas. What's up, Mike?
Half of the Cowboys team aren't even playing together. The defense is completely clueless. Dak hasn't even got hurt yet. I'm thinking they're tanking for Archie Manning's kid.
Well, that would be bad news for the Cowboys if they're tanking for Arch. Mike, have you seen Arch this year? I mean, he's been a disaster for most of the season.
Yeah, that's part of the plan.
So Arch is tanking, and they're tanking to meet somewhere not in the first pick? I mean, Arch is not going to be in this draft. Everyone keeps telling us before the season started.
Lenore Sellers is going to be the number one pick, and then who's going to be the number one the second quarterback taken.
I don't even know if that's Arch.
Mike, thanks so much.
The stars.
Mike, thanks so much. I don't think Arch is going to be in this draft. I think a large part of that is because of his play. I don't believe for a second that if he wasn't the best quarterback in this class in terms of how well he would have been playing, that he would not have been in this draft. I think he would be there. I think what we've seen from Arch, as highly touted as he was coming out of high school, as much hype as there was coming into the season, he's just not a top-end quarterback right now. Now, does he have the physical traits? Yes. I mean, he's big. He can run. He has a strong arm. He definitely has some arm talent, but it's clear that there's fundamentals and maybe some yips things that don't allow him to be considered really a top pick. So I don't think that Arch is in any way part of the Cowboys' plan or really anyone's plan right now.
Let's spin the hypothetical wheel here big time.
Yeah.
Let's just say Arch has a pedestrian season.
Yeah.
Like, there are flashes, there are struggles. He looks like a first-year starter in college football. Yeah. But as their season's winding down, the Cowboys have had a disastrous campaign, and they're in position to pick second. Mm-hmm. And we know Jerry Jones is going to love the idea of drafting a Manning, right?
Yes.
I mean, there's no way he wouldn't.
When your general manager, of which I am.
And what if the Manning brain trust somehow illogically thinks the Cowboys are a good landing spot for Arch?
Yeah.
Because he doesn't have to play right away because they still have Dak there.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any way that, whether it's the Cowboys actually or anybody else, that pleases the Mannings, that the teams at the top of the draft affect how they handle Arch's future?
Arch Manning.
I don't think so. There is this vision and this idea that regardless of how well or how poorly Arch plays, now we're talking like if he plays okay, if he has an okay season and he decides to enter the draft, which that's the only scenario where we could be having this conversation. There's a scenario that he could somehow be way overdrafted than he would be if he was not a Manning. I don't see that. Like, when we think about Peyton Manning, who he was as a college prospect, I mean, he was as elite as they come. They were talking about him as a generational prospect at Tennessee. And I know we kind of forget what Eli Manning did at Ole Miss, because Ole Miss as a program didn't win a national title, didn't play. I don't think they even played in the BCS Bowl Eli Manning. They didn't obviously, win the SEC, but he put up big numbers. He was third in the Heisman Trophy voting. Like, he was also an elite player. I think if Arch Manning comes out, and we're not talking about him in any Heisman conversation, Texas goes to the playoff and maybe they lose in the first round, maybe they just miss the playoff. I don't think that somehow, well, because he's a Manning, because he was a former number one recruit, now he's going to be the number two pick in the draft. Now, I know I don't really love this QB draft.
Right.
It's not definitely one of the better ones, but I don't think that an NFL team is going to mortgage their jobs on a guy that is basically a hope and a wish.
Well, shut up and let me answer.
He's 100% going to get overdrafted by being a Manning. I don't know how many spots of a bump he's going to get for being a Manning, but he's going to benefit from being Peyton and Eli's nephew. Like,
oh man, so, I don't think so.
I mean, I don't know how he doesn't. It's just human nature to think to think. I don't trust NFL execs, all of them. Some people will be able to do it, but there will be more than one team, just by human nature. Sure. This love affair and this like Hollywood script of we're getting the third Manning. Like, we're doing this. It can't not help him when it comes to his draft stuff.
Here's what I'll say. I think, to me, if Arch is truly an elite guy, if he truly is one of the top quarterbacks in the draft, then it won't matter and he'll get drafted wherever he is slotted to be. So we're talking about him being one of the top five picks. Like, I think I don't even want to mention DJ Lagway because he's been so terrible, but someone likes someone else more than Manning, I think they will probably still take the guy who they think has the most potential, but Arch will still be taken high. I think it will be more likely, though, if we're talking about him being, let's say he really should be a third-round pick, could he then be a second or first-round pick? Or if he should be maybe, late first round, could he be, 10 or 8? That, That I could see.
Yeah.
But I think the difference lies for me is I think that if he is an elite guy among other elite guys, he's going to just get drafted wherever he's supposed to go. If we're in a situation we're talking about later rounds, if he's some guy, again, if he's a fifth-round pick and he gets picked drafted in the second round, again, that I could see more. I don't know if I see, though, the guy who's in near the top that he just catapults to number one automatically because he drafted Manning. Again, to me, I just feel like there are NFL executives who, yes, there's comfortability with the Mannings, and also owners that probably want to be attached to the Mannings. I totally get that. But this is the not-for-long league, and to do anything regarding drafting a quarterback and thinking about anything beyond just what they can produce on the field is how you lose your job very quickly.
Yeah, I mean, now Perloff gets mad when I don't accept these throwaway sentences that he puts out there, but there was a day, even just last week, I think, or the week before, where he said Eli Manning did nothing in college, and I was like, that can't be true. And I went and looked, and as you already mentioned, he was third in the Heisman, and over 3 years, he threw for 10,000 yards and 80 really touchdowns, good. Which is the opposite of nothing. But when we got to draft time, was he really better than Philip Rivers? And he went first before, and Rivers went fourth.
I mean, it becomes like a revisionist history thing, but Philip Rivers flew up the draft board. He was not someone at the time we were saying, oh, this guy is going to be the number four pick in the draft. And in fact, when it came down to a conversation with the Giants in terms of who they would draft, he was not in their conversation. It was either Roethlisberger if they stayed or Eli if they went up. So Rivers going four was actually more of him climbing the board than him like, oh, he fell to a spot that he wouldn't have gotten to had there not been a Manning in the draft. He put up a lot of numbers at NC State, but they also lost a lot of games. So it wasn't like Philip Rivers was this household name. He had played a ton, but it was not he was in the Heisman or that he was winning all these championships and then he fell short. I think he went kind of where he was supposed to go. So I think when we think about Arch Manning, what's going to happen, I think it'll be similar. The problem, though, is I just don't know if I see him getting to that number one spot, just from what I'm watching right now.
Yeah, certainly not right now. Shedeur Sanders could have used a Manning bump back in the draft. He did not get it, and his future remains a little cloudy. But his dad weighed in again on Shedeur. That's next on Maggie and Perloff.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shedeur fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.